RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome to the April 30th, 2019 edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Daniel Galvan. I am Jason Ford, and this week's episode of the MMA Report Podcast is brought to you by Roman. Of course, I always appreciate their support of this show. We'll tell you about a special offer that Roman has for the MMA Report Podcast listeners later on in the show. But come here on this week's edition of the show, we're going to get started by going back to last week's podcast where we talked about the varying rule sets in MMA, as have an update on that, particularly the exact rule in Pennsylvania in terms of how a low blow can ultimately end up as a TKO loss for the fighter being accidentally hit with a low blow. So we'll talk about that. Also talk about what happened on Tuesday on the MMA Rules and Regulations Committee about what they're looking at in terms of the grounded fighter rule. Then we're going to recap last weekend's MMA, UFC Fort Lauderdale, Bellator 220. Then it'll be the interview portion of the show, as I'm going to you're going to hear my conversations that I've recently had with Brent Primus. Of course, it's going to be the main event of Saturday's Bellator car over in Birmingham. Also, you hear from Shorty Torres, who's coming off that win in Brave. Also, kind of talk to him about his exit from the UFC. And also, you're going to hear my conversation with Dustin Lampros, who's going to be fighting next week at Shamrock FC 318, a prospect who trains out of Hard Knocks 365 in South Florida. The end of the conversation is a very interesting conversation because it's something I've really talked about in terms of regional matchmaking, of basically saying, why should you take a UFC-level type fight on the regional scene? So a lot of great things there from Dustin. Then we're going to preview this weekend's MMA, Bellator Birmingham, and UFC Ottawa. And then we're going to wrap up this week's podcast by talking about some MMA news and notes items, including the fact of, well, apparently Brock Lesnar's retired. So we'll get into that as the show goes on. Daniel, as always, great to sit here on a Wednesday morning and chat a little MMA with you. I know, obviously, we were both up late last night watching that Warriors Rockets game, but how you doing, man?
Jason, I'm doing quite well. It's been a fun few days, not including the Houston Rockets getting a pair of losses to the Golden State Warriors. I mean, you can't beat on Sunday night, Jason. I went to Disney on Ice and I felt like a child. I went there with no child, just a pair of young adults attending Disney on Ice, and I must say it was absolutely magical. How was your weekend, Jason?
It was good, man. It was good. Went to my nephew's wedding on Saturday. Got back late Saturday night. I did watch the very end of the UFC card, saw the Greg Hardy fight, and I saw about the first three rounds of Jacare and Hermanson before, basically, well, I fell asleep on the couch. But then, Sunday, I sat there and I watched all of the MMA, so we'll get into that. But, you know, really want to start off this week's edition of the podcast by going back to last week's show, where our main topic was about the fact that there's these various rule sets in MMA, and there's at least 10 that we know of. And one of the things that we talked about, we kind of joked about last week, was this update, was this rule in Pennsylvania in terms of a accidental low blow. And after the show was over, about a couple hours after we had wrapped up taping, I actually got the complete list here from the Pennsylvania MMA rules and their clarifications, which, clarifications talk about kneeing and or kicking the head of a ground opponent, targeting, direct or targeting any kid strikes to the kidney, substance. But towards the end of this document, and we talked about how a low blow can actually result in a TKO loss for the fighter being hit with a low blow. And Daniel, this is what it says. Quote, any accidental low blow from a punch or elbow will be treated exactly the same as boxing rules. Must continue after 5 minutes or lose by TKO. It goes on to say, any accidental low blow from a kick or knee, which I believe can be thrown with much more force, that is actually what's written here, fighter still gets 5 minutes rest, but if they cannot continue, ruling will either go to the scorecards, if appropriate number of rounds have been completed, or ruled a no decision. Are WTF on this one, Daniel. WTF. And once again, I'll read it again. An accidental low blow from a punch or elbow, that's the key part of this, punch or elbow will be treated exactly the same as boxing rules. Must continue after 5 minutes or lose by TKO. WTF, Daniel.
That's insane to me. That is like, that's so weird to have that distinction. And to me, that distinction is only there because they're like looking at boxing's homework. And they're writing that down in the rules. Like they're just looking across the desk and seeing what boxing wrote on the rules essay, and they're jotting that down. I just find that so stupid. Sure. So at this point, we're looking at punches and elbows to the groin. As you mentioned, with kicks, if there is a kick, that you won't get a TKO victory if you kick a guy in the ding-dong. You might get a decision victory if it's late enough, which is fine, I would say. But if you punch or elbow a guy in the groin, I understand we don't see that. But simply put, to get rewarded with a TKO victory is absolutely like asinine, because it's as simple as the reason why the fight is ending is solely because an individual used an illegal tactic, and then he's being rewarded for a TKO. If that is the case, Jason, if I am in Pennsylvania, I'm going to get inside control. I'm going to separate the legs of my opponent, and I'm going to hit him as hard as I possibly can in his, you know, groin area. Because if I know if I go with full force and that guy can't continue, I'm going to get a TKO victory. It's time to get that win bonus, Jason. It's time to get that win bonus.
As a lot of fighters like to say, get that second check. I mean, look, it should be noted, it's accidental, you know, low blow.
I'll make it look like an accident, Jason.
Exactly. I mean, it's just one of those rule sets. You sit there and you just go, I don't know how anyone, well, whether we're talking about Greg Serb, who runs the PA Commission, or anyone who's involved with the Pennsylvania Athletic Commission, can sit there and look at that rule and say, this is right. Because you're right. If you are fighting in the state of Pennsylvania and you know that rule, and let's say it's the third round, or maybe you say it's the second round, and you're losing badly, and you get in a position where you can make it accidentally look like you just, you know, punched or elbowed a guy in the groin. You think a guy wouldn't do that?
What if he headbutted a guy in the groin?
Well, I guess then that would be rule. But I mean, this is just it's just a thing, and fighters talk about it all the time. It's about getting that second check. Just I saw that, man, and I sent it to you last week when I got it. I mean, just WTF on that one. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, like, how easy is it to modify something like this, or how hard is it? Because I feel like upon examination, this is just a mistake. This is just wrong, and it should be changed quickly.
It should be, you know, and this is kind of the problem that we have in combat sports, because it's not one body that basically says, hey, okay, here are the rules. And this is kind of the issue that, you know, we've seen over the past couple of years when, you know, we saw the change to the, you know, the unified rules of MMA under the Association of Boxing Commissions and Competitive Sports, is that then every state has to approve it. Now, there's some states and some jurisdictions that, I mean, literally they could make these changes tomorrow. But then there's other states that it's a very much a legal process where it takes a long time. You know, Texas, where Daniel, where you live, they've been going through this process now for a couple of years in trying to get the, you know, the current unified rules of MMA put into it. And my understanding is Greg Alvarez is very much all about, you know, getting, you know, the current unified rules of MMA in there. But on Tuesday, I get a text message from Mike Mazzulli about something that took place on the MMA Rules and Regs Committee. Now, the Rules and Regs Committee, which is headed by Sean Wheelock, you know, in terms of, you know, people that are on that committee, John McCarthy's on that committee. There's doctors on that committee. There's, you know, executive directors, Adam Rohrbach of the Cannabis Commission is on there. So they have these monthly calls. And this was a statement that Mike gave me. He said, quote, the MMA Rules and Regulations Committee is currently looking at restructuring the terminology and mechanics associated with the grounded fighter rule under the unified rules of MMA. They are putting their attention and efforts towards the goal to better clarify the rule, make it easier to understand not only for fighters and officials, but also for fans of MMA. And I ended up talking to Mike yesterday afternoon about this. And one of the things that he said to me, he says, look, we're reviewing rules every year, which, look, is no different than any other major sports, because look, NFL every year the rules committee is looking at how do we make this game better, and then what ends up happening during training camp as broadcasters, we all come in and the officials talk about what they're looking at. To me, it just shows that there are people in this sport that want to evolve the sport. Now, look, I think there's people in the sport that necessarily don't want to evolve the sport. One of the things of, that Mike said, he's like, look, he does not believe the new rule is broken, and there has not been any documented injuries based on the new rule of MMA, on this new grounded fighter rule. And I saw the article that Mark Ramadi wrote at ESPN.com where he talked to Sean Wheelock about this, where Wheelock said the goal is to eventually have a uniform rule across all jurisdictions. Daniel, that's great to say. And look, Sean is a great friend of mine, and I understand what Sean is saying. But Daniel, we have to be realistic here. I just don't think it's a realistic statement to believe that this will truly, that we'll ever have uniform rules across the board. We got to be realistic. I can't see it happening, because I don't know if the ABC will ever be unified.
Yeah, I could see what you're saying, man. It's like, let's take it back to high school or college or even middle school. You ever work in a group project?
Oh, yeah.
That sucked. And you had just two other group members in it. Sarah wasn't doing her work and Jared wanted to, put a unicorn on the paper. Like that's just three people. And when you have a group project that involves over 40 people, you're going to have a lot of issues, a lot of different ideas. And it's hard to think that we will get to a place where things are unified in our country anytime soon, despite the fact that it's so easy to communicate with each other as we talk now over the computer. I mean, you could just get a large group chat going on everybody's iPhones. Yeah. You get that communication going. But the problem is you're dealing with human beings. And it's twofold. Human beings have very different ideas at times. And also, human beings have egos and pride. And sometimes humans don't utilize logic and they utilize emotion. And that makes it so difficult, I think, to come to a consensus unless you're dealing with like just an outright voting process where it's clear this amount of people voted for this. This is how we're doing it. So, man. I don't think we'll see a unified rule set in the next 5 years. Maybe when I have my kid on my knee, things will be unified, Jason. The world will be better. There'll be a unified rule set. Bare knuckle boxing will be opening their first show in Madison Square Garden and whatnot, Jason. But if you're being realistic, I think it's easy to expect this continued division and. The best case scenario, I think, is just a couple of states climbing into the fold, like Texas, as you mentioned, because not only is it hard enough to get in line, but it's also hard enough to put your ticket into the processing machine. The efficiency of bureaucracy in some states, including my home state of Texas, again, it makes these things difficult.
I feel like this is the Rules and Regs Committee way of extending this olive branch to say, let's have a conversation. Now, it notes in this ESPN article, Wheelock said the plans to have a new ground fighter rule approved in time for the ABC annual conference in July. At that time, the alteration of the rule would be brought to the ABC body for a vote. If passed, it would become part of the official Unified Rules of MMA, which is overseen by the ABC. I am planning to be at that ABC conference in July. It's going to be out in Phoenix. It's going to be a little bit of an interesting year because we will have Mike Mazzulli has his term limits have come up as president of the ABC. So I firmly expect that Andy Foster will be elected as the new president. I don't even know if anybody will run against Andy Foster because I personally, this is just my personal belief. I don't think anyone could beat Andy Foster if they run against him. So I think Andy will be, the new president of the ABC, come July. And so, hopefully, love to have another roundtable discussion with, Andy, Mike. And I would love if there were two other people that are on the other side of the equation on this. Would love to have the debate, because that's my thing is this, is like, look, this has to be about the fighters. And I ultimately feel that the fact that the ununification of the ABC is not about what's best for fighters. It's about personal clashes between people. And so I just hope that, hopefully there are people out there, no matter what side of the conversation are you, just go to Phoenix and have the conversation and see if there is a middle ground, because I feel like this story that's now out there is kind of like, hey guys, let's come to the table and let's talk and let's figure out what's best for fighters.
Absolutely. Sign me up for a podcast like that, Jason. I do want to hear a conversation between Andy Foster, Mazzulli, and those that are on the other side of the debate. That, to me, is interesting. Sign me up. I can't wait to listen to that. And I will say that when it comes to the modification of the grounded fighter rule, Jason, is it clear what the modification is, or is that something that's not really apparent?
No, it's obviously something they're discussing. When I talked to Mike, I didn't, he didn't say anything exactly what was going on, but obviously it's going to be an ongoing discussion here over the next, 2 months or so with that Rules and Regs Committee. But ultimately, it has to get voted on by the ABC body, to go through. But it's just one of those things of, I hope that there is a time and like you said a little while ago, I don't think it's anytime soon, but I would hope that whether the UFC is in Fort Lauderdale, whether they're in Ottawa, whether they're in Vegas, whether they're in Australia, they're in Abu Dhabi, they're in the UK, no matter where they are, it's the same rule set. Because at the end of the day, all these varying rule set, it just hurts the fighters. And also, you can't help but wonder, are there times where even a referee might be confused on what the rule set is?
Hey, they're human. They are absolutely human, and I would not be surprised if at some point, I mean, in all honesty, I'm sure these things are reviewed, I mean, and communicated to the referees, and I'm sure the referees communicated to the fighters before each fight, but in the moment, sometimes when you're in the moment and the adrenaline's rushing, you do make a mistake. I mean, heck, everyone makes a mistake in their jobs. It's just the problem is for referees, when they make a mistake, it's not as simple as, accidentally having one of your hairs fall in the Big Mac. You know, you can work at McDonald's and have your hair fall in the Big Mac and accidentally put that other piece of bread on the Big Mac and serve it. And the person who eats it probably won't know. You know, they won't know they have a Big Mac and a hair in their stomach. But if you're an official, you make a mistake, everyone's going to see it. So that's a nice little – that should have been a prediction for you for 2019, Jason. That would have been a very smart MMA prediction, because that would be quite funny, I think, and also tragic.
Yeah, it's and of course it's one of those things when you watch a UFC or Bellator broadcast, that's the one thing, if you don't know, you got to watch kind of being a broadcast of, hey, what rule set are we under? But speaking of the UFC and Bellator, of course, both promotions held events last Saturday night. So for the most part, I watched all these events via DVR. Let me just say this. I love the ESPN Plus platform, but I have found a problem with the ESPN Plus platform, and that is when you are going back to watch a fight. So, Sunday morning, pop open the TV on my Samsung TV, pop open the ESPN app, and, go to ESPN Plus, get the main card lined up. So I started watching the fight. So I get through the Sanhagen Lineker fight, and instead of hitting fast forward, I hit stop, which takes me out of what I'm watching, takes me back to, like, the ESPN main menu. So I'm like, okay, all right, get back into it. it doesn't take you back to where you last watched. It started all the way back in the beginning. So I had to fast forward through it all. Had some buffering issues too, which I thought was weird. I mean, I have pretty good internet speed. But that's about the only problem I found with ESPN Plus so far, Daniel.
That sucks. It happens, though, on some streaming platforms. And I don't know how hard it is to develop that technology, but it's like Netflix has it spoiled. When I'm on Netflix, mm-hmm. and Netflix just knows, like, at the millisecond that I last watched my TV show. The same goes to the sporting event. It's just a little thing. It just is. But, hey, if ESPN Plus can correct it, I would hope so. I think it's clear when you contrast ESPN Plus with DAZN. DAZN is the winner. Yeah, in 2019. It's just a better service currently in terms of the functionality of what you get.
Oh, totally agree. I mean, obviously, you got to pay a little bit more. I mean, I still, you know, I see people complaining about the, you know, $20 a month. And look, and yes, I have a little more disposable income. And I understand that not everyone does. But, I mean, you look at DAZN for $100 a year for what you're getting, that's still a solid deal if you buy the year-long plan.
Especially if you're a boxing fan, like it's one of those deals where, you know, you have the Canelo fight against Jacobs, and it's like that price tag would have been nearly the price of the full year for DAZN.
Oh, totally.
You know, you can totally talk yourself into purchasing that year long plan and saying there's going to be at least two big boxing fights I want to see, and probably a lot more this year. So that's already a deal. So, you know, the problem is a lot of these fights, like, the big money boxing fights, I'm not super enthused about, but the Bellator thing is enough for me. And it's one of those deals where I have a decent amount of – I have, like, enough disposable income where I don't buy anything other than food. And so I can spend it on MMA. But, you know, I'm a struggling 20-year-old. So if I really liked buying T-shirts and pants all the time, like, maybe I wouldn't be able to afford DAZN. But I'm at a point in my life where I kind of prioritize, you know, streaming MMA content. So I don't know if that's my own problem, but $20 a month is expensive. At the end of the day, my advice would be definitely go with the year-long subscription to DAZN. Because also, like, there's nothing worse if you're my age or really any age and you have that monthly leash on your bank account and you kind of forget to unsubscribe because then that catches up to you.
The only thing that's bad about it is, and me and my buddies were on a group text and we were talking about, you know, they're like, hey, Jason, if you get back, you know, in time, you know, you want to meet up and watch the fights. I go, here's the problem, guys. They're all on streaming platforms, so it's not going to be at a bar. So we can't exactly just meet at a bar, have a couple beers, and watch the fights. I mean, that's the only kind of bad thing about this deal. But when I went back and watched the fights, I actually started with the UFC card, watched the main card. I mean, Jack Hermanson, I mean, man, what a performance. I mean, he controlled Jacare throughout that fight. Just, a great performance by him and truly showing he is best, one of the best middleweights, in the UFC. Greg Hardy, what we expected. That's exactly what we expected. I think it's comedy how Dana White kind of reacted to it, which pretty much just basically told you he had no idea who he was fighting. We knew that that was a setup fight. Perry Oliveira, just a great back and forth fight. If you didn't watch that fight, go back and watch that fight. But also watch the walkouts. Great walkouts by both guys. Glover, kind of like his last fight. You know, struggled a little early on against Kutalaba, but then Kutalaba just pretty much gasses out. Glover gets the win there in the second round. Corey Sandhagen, man, he's showing he's going to be a problem at 35, getting that split decision win over Lineker. And Roosevelt Roberts, really a guy to kind of really pay attention to in the regional scene. I thought Thomas Gifford gave him a good fight. Clear, 3-0 win for Roosevelt Roberts, but I thought Thomas did show something a little bit there. But to me, this fight card is about Jack Hermanson and just a dominating a fight he had against Jacare. And I think the thing is he wasn't scared to go down to the ground with Jacare, where we both know that's Jacare's world in terms of jiu-jitsu.
Dude, that was crazy. This fight was interesting because it was absolutely like Jack Hermanson graduated today or on Saturday. He graduated to the elite tier of the middleweights in the UFC. This dude outright beat Jacare Souza in every facet of mixed martial arts. To me, man, his stand-up looks great. against Jacare. And the grappling was absolutely the most surprising aspect of this because, you know, what's Jacare's PhD in? It's in the art of jiu-jitsu. And Hermanson was able to win three rounds in this one for sure, maybe four. And I just thought watching this fight, this was just a complete fighter here. With Jacare, it absolutely seems like a loss like this is devastating for him because I don't know if he can kind of return to glory here. But the story of this entire fight card, I mean, there's a pair of stories, obviously. There's the Jack Hermanson elevating himself to middleweight. And then obviously anytime Greg Hardy fights, he is a part of the story. I mean, it rings true. You know, follow the money and look at the amount of money he's making. $75,000 to fight, $75,000 to win for a guy in a second UFC fight. Greg Hardy gets a TKO win over Dmitry Smolyakov, and yeah, easy win. Again, all I can say is I don't like watching Greg Hardy fight. I kind of wish he wasn't in the UFC, but he'll be there for a while. And I guess also the Mike Perry victory over Alex Oliveira. Mike Perry looks great, Jason, in the welterweight division.
Yeah,
no, he looked really smooth there.
Yeah, he did. I mean, it's kind of crazy. Greg Hardy, his second fight, he had the third highest salary on this fight card. Jim Miller topped the list at $180,000. Glover Sherr topped the list at $210,000. Jim Miller, number two, at $180,000. And Greg Hardy at three at $150,000.
Don't forget about Jacare and Arlovski.
Oh, Jacare. Yeah. Those two guys also, you know. Yeah. But it's crazy that, you know, a guy like Greg Hardy, and in a way you understand why he's making the amount of money is, but you look at, you know, Jack Hermanson, who's, you know, clearly now, top five, maybe even top three middleweight in the UFC, making, you know, far less than what Greg Hardy is making. But, you know, one of the things about Greg Hardy, and look, I'm not going to, you know, even though there was an idiot comment by one of his coaches on BloodyElbow.com that I could not believe what I read. I'm dumbfounded, and I sent you that article late last night. But this is the thing about Greg Hardy, you know, and as a fighter, you look at him and you can see that he could be a problem for a lot of fighters in the UFC heavyweight division. The only thing I really, truly question about him is what happens when you face someone who's got a very good grappling game and has the ability to control where the fight goes. I look at the ceiling for Greg Hardy, Daniel. I think it's, I don't know how high it is because he still has, you know, he's very young in his career. But I think you can't doubt that this guy has abilities.
Yeah, he definitely does. He definitely absolutely does. And to go out there against another heavyweight and look the way he did on the feet and get that victory, it shows talent. And he's going to have some success here, especially if the UFC matches him up with guys who are developing. As any fighter who's coming up with potential and could be a star, I mean, that should be the strategy. And I think Greg Hardy's going to have a lot of immediate success now. I think he's going to get these first-round victories under his belt. I mean, my prognostication is that he will do so, and eventually he'll lose when he starts fighting these top-tier guys. When he fights the Augusto Sakais of the world, not only because Augusto clearly pays judges as he got that decision over Andre Arlovski, but I do think Greg Hardy's physical tools, and also, you know, when he's trained in the gym, he has the ability to knock dudes out, and I think he's going to do so early on. But just to go back to that quote you were alluding to, I'll just go out and read it out because I think it's worth reading out because it's so awful. It's such an awful quote that I think we should at least say it. So the interview is with it's a Bloody Elbow article by Nick Baldwin. And he talks to Billy Padden, the boxing coach at ATT in Florida, Jason. And this is how it reads, the two paragraphs here. Padden, who was a probation officer for 10 years in Philadelphia, said he believes Hardy had no malice during the alleged incident. And then Padden goes on to say, I watched Greg Hardy hit grown men and make them limp as noodles in seconds. If he had any malice the night of this alleged incident, the woman would be dead. That is absolutely the worst quote we will see all year long, probably all decade long. And I feel like that would be a really bad argument in court. I just feel like that would be like if he was representing the military people and a few good men, the movie would be 5 minutes. Because Jesus Christ, what the hell is that?
Dave, if we were doing the show on video, you would see me literally sitting here in my home office just shaking my head.
Dude.
That's all I'm doing. Like, first off, like, that has to be one of the most... I couldn't believe when I saw that come across my timeline. I could not believe that quote. I mean, it's just like, oh my God. Like, even a, you know, there's people inside the UFC that once they saw that article, they were cringing. And just yeah. going, oh my God, why would you say something like that to a reporter? I mean, because right when you say that, that becomes the headline. It doesn't matter anything else you say in that interview. You just gave that article that is going to get, you know, look, if Billy Patton was doing an article about Greg Hardy and it was just, you know, and that wasn't in the story, do I click the link? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
But because I, once I saw that headline, I go, oh, I got to read this. I go, you know, and I'm like, okay, maybe it's a headline taken a little out of context. I'm like, nope, no, it wasn't.
Yeah, no, it wasn't, man. That was just so stupid. Like, you don't even want to entertain what he's saying, but if you do, it's like, that's so illogical. I could beat someone up, but if I don't kill them, I don't have malice. Like, man, we have a whole lot of assault cases that need to get expunged. But according to the Billy's way of thinking, I mean, it's just stupid. I mean, we can crown it the worst quote of the year. And the fact that that's that dude's boxing coach, I mean, Jesus Christ, yeah. Bad look for American Top Team. I know sometimes you do interviews and you say stuff you wish you didn't. I mean, that was it. So, yeah. Man, every time Greg Hardy fights, I think we're going to get at least one or two bad articles with yeah, people around him. Trying to defend what he did back in his NFL career.
Yeah, I mean, this is like my thing about Greg Hardy, and because I know everyone is talking, you know, I really want to more talk about what he's doing inside the cage than what has happened in his past. It's a part of the story, but I feel like that story just, I'm sitting here, I'm like, let's talk about him actually as a fighter. I see talent, but also, I do still have a lot of question marks. What the fight hits minute 6, minute 7, minute 8, minute 9, minute 10, 11 through 15. I don't know if he's got a 15-minute gas tank. I think he's got a 5-minute gas tank. But the UFC has to be very smart in how they match him. Because if he wants to start fighting the top, like him calling himself the Bo Jackson of MMA, like, oh my God, come on, dude. Like, you just want a setup fight. Let's be honest about it. I mean, his first two fights in the UFC were set up for him to win. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. The UFC did not put him in those fights thinking he could lose. I mean, they expected him to win those fights, and it wasn't an entertaining fight to watch. I mean, you know, Perry. I mean, you looked at, you know, leading up to that co-main event, it was a fun fight card to watch, and I enjoyed the main event as well. But it just, oh man, that quote, I'm still amazed by that quote. I would love to be a fly on the wall inside ATT today when Billy walks in and what people are saying to him.
Yeah. Imagine you're a female fighter. Imagine you're not just a female fighter. You're just a person. You're just a human being. I would be like, what the hell? Top Team and just, yeah.
What if you're not an MMA fan and you're just a casual sports fan, that article comes across your timeline, what are you thinking?
You're disgusted, absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, just, yeah, as you mentioned, Jason, we see it all the time with heavyweights. They come and they look great, first round victory, they get taken to the second and third, and that's when they struggle. So we shall see, but it was a positive outing for Greg Hardy. Obviously, Jack Hermanson established himself as an elite middleweight. And then everything else in the card, Jason, I mean, you're right. It was a real good card. To me, the fighters that stuck out, Mike Perry, Corey Sandhagen with his win over John Lineker. And then the other fighter I will point to would be Carla Esparza. The fight itself wasn't entertaining at all, but she beat Verna Jandiroba in a fight where I thought, man, Esparza is gonna lose this one. This is a fight to set up for Janderoba. Didn't turn out that way. She used her wrestling rounds 1 and 3 to get the win. Oh yeah, and also Takashi Sato got a nice TKO victory over Ben Saunders in the second round. So
yeah,
it was a fun little card.
Yeah, fun card. Of course, over on the West Coast, of course, that was here in my home state of Florida, but over in California, it was Bellator 220. Of course, headlined by Roy McDonald and John Fitch, which ends up being declared a majority draw. You know, I watched the fight, Daniel, and I thought it was 3-2 Rory. The question comes down to whether you score a 10-8 third round for John Fitch. Personally, I don't think I could justify a 10-8. I understand why a judge would put that 10-8 round, but to me, I had it 48-47 for Roy McDonald. It is very weird, the fact, though, if we get a majority draw, and since Rory is the title holder, he automatically moves on because, well, he didn't lose his title.
Yeah, it's weird, and it kind of sucks. It's something that is, I understand why it happened, in that you can't have a guy go out there for a sixth round. You know, maybe that's the issue with having a champion defending his championship in tournament fights, is you can't do 3-round fights with a sudden death round after. Or, yeah, I mean, just the way everything happened, it feels empty, and I feel like the solution would be having it go to a judge's scorecard again, where they just decide who wins the fight and advances to the next round. Obviously, on the official record, we'll keep it as a majority draw. But I think that's a better way than just you came in with the championship, especially because you think of the way we think of champions in MMA. And for the UFC, the way they established champions was every fight you were crowning a new champion, kind of. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why these guys have so many belts in their houses back in the day, you know. So I had rounds 1, 2, and 4 for McDonald, and then I had 3 and 5 for Fitch with the 10-9 third round. This fight sucked, man. Rory looked awful, and he still won. John Fitch had a game plan, and we all know what it was, and it was wrestling. And I don't think he earned himself any new fans with this performance. Unfortunately, again, this was a bad main event for Bellator. That's to be expected when you employ John Fitch. Mm-hmm. It sucks for him because I enjoy him as a person, and I'm proud. You know, this guy's one of the best welterweights in the history of the sport. But unfortunately, his fighting style doesn't lend itself to the most exciting contest, and we saw it come into fruition again. And to me, the story is real simple. Rory continues not to return to glory. He continues not to look like he did in the UFC. And even as he advances to the second round against Neiman Gracie, that still rings true with this performance. He looks like a different version of himself, and it's not a positive.
And of course, obviously, the big takeaway is his post-fight interview and everything he said. But on Tuesday, it was announced Rory is continuing his MMA career. He's not retiring. He will fight Neiman Gracie on June 14th, even though there is a medical suspension out there that kind of puts little questions into that. But this is what Roy McDonald said when he released a statement yesterday, and Bellator put it out on a press release. He says, quote, "I want to take time to thank everyone who had the chance to see my fight last weekend and share that candid moment I had in the Bellator cage with John McCarthy. I felt an internal struggle during the fight I never experienced before. I have always enjoyed my time in the cage by expressing my techniques in full-out combat against another top-level fighter, but this time, I wasn't enjoying it. It felt more like a job than satisfaction I am used to feeling by being dominant and applying what I have practiced to defeat someone. Even during my dominant moments, I felt I was completing a task, and these feelings were a bit confusing to me because it's new. I used to fight with anger I held within myself from pain I experienced in my past. To be honest, I believe this comes from my heart changing as I'm walking as a new life as a Christian. The Lord has given me peace and freedom from the pain that haunted me in my heart from my younger years. I would only satisfy myself for a short period of time from winning fights until the feeling would resonate in me again. So now I don't feel the same emotions I have in the past while competing. I still and will always have the passion for martial arts and do not believe, as a Christian, that it's wrong for myself to compete in a professional sport that is violent. In fact, I'm happy to testify about being a Christian on this platform I've been given. To be clear, I am not retiring from a professional MMA career. I've always been true and honest in the sport, and I've spoke from the heart. As for my career at the moment, I'm going to move forward in the tournament and compete boldly against Neiman Gracie in New York at MSG on June 14th. Thank you for your support and all the kind messages I received after a sentimental moment I had for all to see after 14 years of being in the sport. And that was a statement by Rory McDonald. Now, Rory does have a 60-day suspension, which obviously falls in that window of June 14th, so we'll see what happens there. You know, Daniel, if I'm Scott Coker and I'm standing in the cage and I'm hearing this, I'm going, uh-oh. Because I think that, you know, I think Scott Coker's got to be sitting there in his mind going, man, should this guy be fighting? And it was interesting because I watched a little bit of the post-fight show on DAZN after I watched the main card, and Josh Thompson was just sitting there saying, he goes, as I got older, he goes, I understand where Rory was coming from. He goes, because I kind of went through the same thing of we all kind of get there. And, man, it's a fascinating moment, but also it raises a lot of questions, Daniel.
Well, it explains things, too. It explains why he's fought how he's fought. And I, look, as a viewer and as someone who just, you know, likes honesty, man, one of the best post-fight interviews in a while. It was so authentic and so real, and it allows you to get inside the head of Rory. And so often fighters don't project that. They project just a strong image of themselves, like they're always in the best shape of their life and they're 100% committed. But that's not real life. You know, sometimes you go to work and your head's not in it. You're questioning everything. That's a human experience, and we got that out of Rory. For mixed martial arts, I think we see time and again that's a really, really bad place to be, because when you're having an introspective conversation in the middle of getting punched in the head, you're going to get your lights put out. He was fortunate that he was in the cage with John Fitch, where it's a fight where it's not Douglas Lima. And you go up against someone like Douglas Lima with that type of mental state, that's going to be a difficult mountain to climb, because it appears. And the most interesting aspect to me of the post-fight interview is how Rory talks about basically not being able to pull the trigger on his techniques. And we've seen that at times where it appears he has the ability to do real damage to his opponents and get victories, but he's just not pulling the trigger. He's not unloading the volume. Mm-hmm. And that to me is the most real correlation between what's in his head and why he may not be having the amount of success he has. I wouldn't be surprised if Rory rights this ship. But my general expectation is he's going to go out there, he's going to beat Neiman Gracie, and he's going to go and lose in the finals.
Yeah, I expect he gets a win over Neiman Gracie. We'll see what happens there, but just kind of fascinating. John Fitch, you know, I saw a little picture that MMA Fighting had. I don't know if maybe he was on Luke Thomas' show or something, but basically saying that, you know, basically the end is coming, which is something he talked about on the show last week. He mentioned that to me, that kind of what his plan was to get through this tournament, you know, win the title and maybe have one more fight and then call it a career, but we'll see what happens there. Lee McFarlane, she retains her title via doctor stoppage. Man, just a brutal elbow. But you got a mad respect to Lee McFarlane saying, I don't want to win this way. Vita, I'm giving you a rematch.
Yeah, man, Vita really impressed me, man. Looking at her resume heading in this fight, I was like, nice little win for McFarlane here. And Vita said, I have other plans. She was so competitive. Clearly won a round, maybe two, heading into that Dr. Stoppage cut, a bloody fight there, and a fight where we have a division in women's flyweight where there isn't a whole lot of challengers. When you have an inconclusive victory, it makes all the sense in the world to run it back in. Vita did more in this fight than anything she's done in her career to warrant a championship fight. She's obviously a Bellator flyweight championship level fighter, as she displayed in this fight. And I thoroughly enjoy watching Lima Lay as champion. So sign me up for a rematch. This was a fun fight day. Sign me up for McFarlane, Vita too.
Oh, yeah, definitely sign me up for that one. Big win for her. Benson Henderson, questionable split decision win over Adam Piccolotti. I thought Adam performed really well. Phil Davis breaks the jaw of Liam McGarry, and that's ultimately what caused Liam to say, "I'm done." Gaston Bolanos also gets the win there. But you know, one of the things that you know really sticks out to me about this fight card is when you look at those salaries for the top four fights in this card. And you wonder why by fighters are so interested in Bellator? Just look at those disco salaries. That's why.
I mean, which one jumps out to you the most? That kind of projects that image.
I think Vitor Ortega making $40,000 just a show. Mm-hmm. If Vitor Ortega was in the UFC, she's not making anything like that.
In her first fight, she's probably making 10 and 10.
Yeah, I mean, but she's had three or four fights in Bellator this week, maybe five fights. She would not be at $40,000 a show in the UFC. No way.
Yeah, the pay's good, man. I mean, even Piccolotti's number's good, and, you know, he deserved it. That was a hell of a fight. It came down to who won the third round. And, you know, great grappling contest. But for Bellator, that has to be the area where you attack the UFC. You got to do good paydays for your main card fighters. Obviously, the prelim guys, I mean, they're probably getting peanuts. But they also don't have Wikipedia profiles.
Well, at the end of the day, and I know people are going to complain about that, but it's like, look, these guys are there to sell tickets. And I'm sure they all get a good commission on the tickets they sell. So, and once again, it's disclosed salaries. I don't get up in arms about when I see the salaries of a Bellator undercard because I know what it is. It's a regionalized card that just happens to be under the Bellator cage and branding.
Yeah, aside from one or two fights where they have prospects, that's what it is. And I think that's the correct strategy going forward. It just makes no sense to do good main card and prelims at this point. The focus has to be getting viewers to watch your product for 2.5 hours a day, not 6.5. So, if you're not the UFC, that has to be the plan.
And the one thing I'll say, and Bellator deserves a lot of credit for this, they are in a great stretch right now where they have got 3 months of three big events. Well, we saw this past weekend in San Jose. You know, next week we've got the card in Chicago, of course, headlined by Chandler and Pitbull. They had the conference call yesterday, which was I did listen to that. Not breaking news. Michael Chandler and Patricio Pitbull don't like each other. AJ McKee believes he should be fighting for the Bellator featherweight title. It doesn't understand why Pitbull is fighting Chandler. He did a good job of selling himself. I'll give him that. He did a great job of selling himself, but definitely looking forward to Bellator. Then of course the June card. You know, obviously the plan is to have Rory and Neiman Gracie on that one. Also, Koji Horiguchi versus Darion Caldwell, which if Horiguchi wins, he's going to be obligated to defend the Bellator bantamweight title at least once a year. Also, of course, that card is going to be headlined by Lil Machida and Chael Sonnen. Also, Dylan Danced on that card. Heather Hardy is going to be on that card as well. So Bellator's in a nice little stretch here of putting together events that are definitely going to get you to the television set. And look, if my nephew wasn't getting married last Saturday, I would have been right in front of my television set. I would have set one TV up on DAZN, one TV up on ESPN+. But yeah, I saw some people kind of talk about this. Like, we are now in a world where you think about 5 years ago, you didn't think about setting up two TVs in your living room to watch a sporting event, but that's where we're at now, Daniel.
Man, you got to set up two TVs, a tablet, and conjure up an image through dark magic to keep informed. I mean, hell, you need to – if you're just a sports fan, man, you got to have multiple TVs to watch the playoffs. If you like both hockey and basketball, it's impossible to consume everything. But if you're a fan of MMA too, it's a tough life, man. You know, we have another week with UFC and Bellator on the same weekend.
Well, at least they're not at the same times, though, because, you know, we're going to talk about that a little later on here in the show. But definitely want to tell you about our friends over at Roman. Of course, this week's episode of the MMA Report podcast is presented by Roman. Guys, we are terrible at taking care of our health, whether it's a knee injury, back injury, or something worse. We are usually just more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. Look, I am completely guilty of it myself. I've talked about it. You know, had to get some dental work done last year. Recently had to get my ear looked at. Look, the last thing I want to do is go to the doctor. But look, the same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show that 70% of guys, yes, 70% of guys who experience erectile dysfunction don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to get checked out by a doctor and get treated for ED online.
Yeah, man, Roman is a one-stop shop where you can chat with a licensed U.S. physician who can treat ED and, if safe and appropriate, ship medication right to your door. With Roman, there are no waiting rooms, awkward face-to-face conversations, or uncomfortable trips to the pharmacy. You can handle everything discreetly online. All you have to do is visit GetRoman.com/MMAReport. Visit GetRoman.com/MMAReport. Complete an online visit. Chat with the doctor, and if the doctor decides it would be safe and appropriate, they'll ship genuine medication right to your door in discreet, unmarked packaging. Guys, go online and get checked by the doctor. Erectile dysfunction is a problem that guys don't tackle, but with Roman, it's really simple, so take care of it.
And for our listeners here of the MMA Report podcast, for a free online visit, go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport. That's GetRoman.com/MMAReport. For a free online visit, GetRoman.com/MMAReport. And, of course, always appreciate everyone out there helping, supporting our advertisers because, well, that lets them know that you heard it here on the MMA Report podcast. But right now it's time for the interview portion of the podcast. Up first, you're going to hear my conversation with Brent Primus, who's going to be the main event of Saturday's Bellator card over in Birmingham, going to be taking on Tim Wilde. I had a chance to talk to him. One of the interesting things in this interview, he talks about the fact of he didn't go back and watch the fight with Michael Chandler because he knows what he did wrong. Then you're going to hear my conversation with Shorty Torres, who's going to recap his win, his recent win, Brave, and his Brave debut. Also kind of talked about the learning lessons of everything that happened in the UFC. And then the final conversation with Dustin Lampros, who's going to be fighting next week at Shamrock FC 318.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, man, it's going to be in the main event of the Bellator event in Birmingham. It's Brent Primus. Brent, I appreciate the time. Of course, first time we've had a chance to see you since your fight against Michael Chandler. After that fight was over, how many times did you go back and watch it and critique yourself? And is there any big takeaway you take away from that fight?
Honestly, I haven't even watched the full fight one time. I'm like so disappointed in myself and embarrassed by that fight that I really don't even want to watch it, man. I'm just killing myself over that fight. Like, I really couldn't sleep for like weeks after that. It was like haunting me. I know I could have fought a lot better, and I just, it's killing me, man. I should have had him in the second round. I should have switched that to a Gable choke. I should have had my body triangle on him. Like, there's just so many things that, like, it's killing me, man. I could have done a way better than that, but I'm not gonna take anything away from Chandler. He fought a good fight. It is what it is, but man, I just cannot wait for that rematch. I know I can do a lot better. I know I can finish him on my feet. I feel really good on my feet, and it is what it is, man. I'm not gonna make any excuses, but I got headbutted kind of in the first round, and I honestly don't remember anything until the fourth round. Everything was like a big fog. It was so crazy, like, it was crazy, man. The human brain is so nuts, and it's weird because actually a month before I fought Chandler, I got headbutted in sparring, and I couldn't really see or hear when I was sparring, and I had no depth perception of like when I was sparring, and it was kind of like that same feeling that I got headbutted in kind of the same spot, and man, it is what it is, but I'm killing myself over that fight, and I am kind of embarrassed about it. I really should have done way better, so I just cannot wait for that rematch.
In terms of the headbutt and what you mentioned there, is that the first time it's ever happened in a fight for you?
Yeah, in a fight for sure, yeah.
I mean, I feel like you did earn a lot of fans in that fight, even though it didn't go your way. Is as you have, you know, once that, you know, you get back in the gym and you start preparing for this fight, did it cause you to alter anything in how you prepare for a fight?
I mean, I definitely 100% make sure I have headgear on no matter what I spar, like, outside of the fight, you know, for sure. But, man, I prepared well. Like, I really wish that I would have fought more and gotten the cage more. And I'm not sure if there's really such thing as ring rust, but I feel the more you fight, the better you're going to get through the nerves and the all the stuff, the cameras and the adrenaline and all that stuff. So I definitely wish I would have had a fight before then or whatever. But, yeah, man, I feel great. I my stand-up feels really good. I know I can knock Chandler out. I feel really good. I've been training with, you know, good guys, and I've been my stand-up feels just as good as my ground game. So I feel really good. And I really, you know, on that fight, I'm so stubborn. I really should have switched my game plan. My game plan was to beat him up on the feet until he wants to take me down, and then I was going to use my jiu-jitsu to submit him and sweep him. And I've been submitting high-level guys, and everybody on the ground I've been doing really, really good with. And I was just so stubborn, and I was in a weird place in my brain, you know, getting hit. And, like, I just kept on thinking, eventually, I'm going to catch him. I'm going to catch him. I'm going to catch him. I'm going to sweep him. And I really should have switched my game plan, used my jiu-jitsu to stand up. I should have I didn't really try any takedown defense at all. I was welcoming the takedown, and I should have so next time, my next fight, I have to be able to switch my game plan on a dime. You know, however the fight's going, I have to switch. I can't be stubborn, and I've always been a really stubborn person, and but it hurt me in that fight for sure.
Is that, in a way, kind of a, I don't know if fear is the right way to put it, but like this, like, man, I can't be stubborn in fights, you know? I mean, how do you, is there kind of that fear of, like, it's going to pop up at some time down the road again, and you're not going to get past that?
I think I learned a really big, valuable lesson in that fight, and I really feel that my next, from now on, I'm going to, if the fight's not going my way, boom, I have to switch it immediately. And I'm going to talk to my coaches and be like, you know, if you guys feel like this game plan isn't working, I need you guys to tell me to switch it up and do something else. And I feel confident in my coaches. I love them. And I just can't wait to get that rematch with Chandler. Like, literally, I could not sleep for weeks and weeks, and still it haunts me. Like, I'm driving down the road and my wife's talking to me, and I'm just thinking about the fight. Like, gosh, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do this? And she's like, Brent, what? And I'm just, it's crazy, man. Like, I'm a mental case as it is, and it's going to take forever for me to get over that fight, for sure.
You mentioned about your teammates, and of course, anyone who follows you on IG, you know, you spend a lot of time at Team Oyama, along with up in the Northeast, up there as well. But you had a post where you talked about how training develops a special bond with someone. Can you kind of expand on that and what that special bond means to you?
Yeah, man, it's crazy. It's a weird thing. Like, with training partners, there's guys that I've trained with for like 1 week, but we train every single day. We punch each other in the faces. We're kicking each other. We're choking each other. And it's just like something about that. You cannot get that bond, that relationship, that love, like, doing anything else. Man, I just love and care for all my training partners so much. And if it wasn't for all of them, I wouldn't be who I am. I wouldn't be where I'm at. And I just appreciate them all so much. And like I say, man, like, you punch somebody in the head and they punch you back. You get this crazy special bond, and it's hard to explain until you actually do it. So go find some random dude and start punching them, let them punch you, and you'll see what I'm saying.
Yeah, I saw somebody that I'm very familiar with, Frank Camacho, just started training at Team Oyama. I've seen y'all two training together. Of course, he comes from the islands, and you're from the Northeast. Yeah. How did that bond kind of come together?
He's the man, dude. He's like just the most humble, coolest dude. But on the mats, he's a shark, man. He'll get you, you know. So that's one guy that I love training with, and I wish that he only came there at kind of the end of my camp. But I look forward to getting some more training with him, man. He's an awesome guy, and he's a stud too.
Of course, you're getting ready to head overseas. Is this going to be the first time for you going outside the United States?
I've been to Amsterdam and to Greece once before, and that was awesome. So not the first time, but this is my first time fighting out of the States. First time fighting out of the States. So I'm excited, and I'm not looking forward to that 15, 17-hour flight. But other than that, you know, it's going to be fun.
Yeah, you talk to so many fighters who talk about that. I say, man, that long flight. And obviously you're trying to watch your weight as well of not putting those bad weight. But in terms of the fight, what excites you about this matchup? Is it merely just about getting back in there to get your, you know, back in line to, you know, maybe it's a rematch against Chandler, or who knows, maybe it's against Patricio.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I'm excited. I just want to get in there and get a win. I hate looking at my my last fight and seeing a loss, and I just can't wait to get in there and get a win, man. I'm really, really excited, and I know Tim's a tough guy. He's got really good stand-up. He's got
good angles, good footwork. So I definitely got to be smart and be patient, but like I said, I really feel like I'm more well-rounded, and I'm going to prove that on May 4th.
And of course, who knows? You know, win here, maybe put you right back in line for a title matchup. Are you expecting Chandler to retain the title against Patricio?
I am. You know, if it wasn't for me wanting to fight Chandler and take that belt from him myself, I would definitely want Patricio to win. I think Patricio is a better martial artist. They're tough dudes, him and his brother both. I like him and respect him way more than Chandler, but I really want to be the one to dethrone Chandler. So I want Chandler to win so I can take him out.
And, of course, this all goes down here May the 4th over in Birmingham. Brent, man, as always, I appreciate time. Of course, let me know if they can follow you out on social media. And, of course, those sponsors that are helping you out for this fight camp.
Yeah, I mean, you can check me out at Brent Primus 155. And all my sponsors, man, they help me out so much. The Turp House. Their CBD oil is amazing, man. Helps me sleep like crazy. And Venom, I love their gear, and they help me out so much with the best gear. And Don Lewis Plumbing, Eugene Fisherman's Market. I know I'm forgetting some people, but yeah, thank you to all my sponsors for everything, man. They really helped me out for sure.
Awesome, Brent, man. Safe travels overseas, man.
Thank you so much.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man who scored a victory in his Brave debut, Shorty Torres. Shorty, man, I appreciate the time. I got to tell you, one of the things that really stuck out to me was your post-fight interview. I don't know if I've ever heard a fighter, I think it'd be as brutally honest as you were, where you talked about saying that you're intimidated by his jiu-jitsu. That's something you don't hear fighters necessarily talk about. So I that was like a breath of fresh air for me to hear a fighter just kind of be that open and honest about it.
Well, that was the biggest thing. Like, I think in the second round, besides him taking my back, one of the rounds, he ended up pulling guard. You know, if you have somebody pulling guard in you in an MMA fight, he has solid jiu-jitsu. That's his confidence. That's his bread and butter. So, you know, for me, watching all of his fights, all of his wins have been by submission. If not a TKO win, but on the ground. You know, everything's implemented off the ground. It's like, I'm not a John Jones character where Jones wants to beat you at your best. He wants to beat you at your feel. That's not my thing. You know, and I'm not saying I'm bad at jiu-jitsu. I'm perfectly fine with it. But when you have a guy that's his main way of winning, why jump into deep water? I don't have to. So, you know, it was a little aggravating because, again, in the fight, he, you know, took my back, held on, and there wasn't anything. There's a time where he's pulling guard or I'm on top. I take him down, but he's holding my wrist. He's holding position, and I'm not letting him go for submission, but then he's not allowing me to strike. You know, so it doesn't make it a fan entertaining fight, and that's obviously something I always try to do, and it got very aggravating in the fight.
But you go out there and get the win. Heading into the fight, of course, this fight got delayed a little bit. You had a little setback there. Did you feel like because of it was your first fight since, you know, not getting the win in your last UFC fight, did you feel like a chip on your shoulder or additional pressure?
There was a lot of pressure in this fight, you know, one, being released from the UFC, mainly with the resume that I had, being signed to, you know, with the UFC, being signed to a very, very basic contract with the resume I had, going 1-1, having 2 last-minute fights in 45 days. For people who don't know, I cut 54 pounds and wasn't given a choice for either fight. My ultimatum was I take the Alex Perez fight or I don't fight sometime next year. The Alex Perez fight, when I found that, was in July, 20 days later. Sometime next year is six more months. And sometime next year doesn't mean January or February. It means sometime next year. It could mean December. So, you know, for me, I took the fight. It wasn't my best performance. I mentally broke because of the weight cut before the week even started. And honestly, if it was one of those things, I could say I called myself losing before even that fight started. So with this one, I had 8 months leading up to the fight. And honestly, it was more of a mental preparation type of thing. I know physically I can hang with the best. Again, I was a 2-belt champion, first ever 2-time IMF champ, and, you know, this gigantic resume. But when fight week happened, there was a lot of things made for this fight week. There was a lot of things that was like, okay, cool, I got to get it done. Oh, hey, roadblock. All right, cool, let's go around it. Oh, hey, roadblock. And I was like, man, something just doesn't want, you know, things to go well. So for me, it was more of a mental win that I made weight, pushed through, You know, did the fight, won the fight in a, I believe, in a dominant fashion. Wasn't, again, the most exciting, but I won the two rounds that I believed I won. And from there, you know, I believe I do deserve a title shot. I have a lot of hype behind me. I have a lot of fans behind me that want me to, you know, go for the gold. And I know Brave is definitely looking forward to that as well.
In terms of what you're talking about there about mentally breaking, had that ever happened throughout all of your athletic time where, you know, amateur running before your amateur run, where you kind of just felt that way heading into a competition?
No, then that's why, you know, if you look at my resume, I had 33 straight fights that I've won. You know, I was in a 33 straight winning streak, and then I lose one in a TKO where I've never been TKO'd. I've been caught in submissions before. I've been in trouble before, but I've always fought back. This one, even Alex Perez says, and I told him, or he told me after the fight, he goes, "Dude, you rocked me. Why did you stop walking forward?" I was like, I don't know, I just didn't want to. I didn't care. You know, then I ended up getting TKO'd, and it was just one of those things that fighting is a mental sport. Again, you look at, if it was all physical, Yoel Romero, you know, Tim Kennedy, all these physically perfect guys would be world champions, but why aren't they world champs? Well, there's other guys that are just mentally better than them. Again, there's just these little aspects that change the whole thing of the sport. I mean, I call people gym warriors sometimes, but they're phenomenal in the gym, and then they go under the lights and they freeze. Why? It's all mental. So for me, I didn't want to mentally break for this fight. It was 8 months of literally mental training. You know, I hired a sports psychologist. I had my family behind me. I had a lot of people that I decided to be a little more social, a little more outgoing with. And I think because of that, it really did help a lot, instead of trying to put everything on my shoulders and be to myself and be secluded and all that stuff. But this fight, I was like, you know what? Instead of giving up like the last one and really letting a lot of people down, which is my biggest fear, it's more of, even though there's all these roadblocks, let's try. And if I fail, at least I can say I tried my best compared to not trying at all and quitting like my last fight. So for me, it was more 100% of a mental win than a physical one.
And I know I've seen you, you've talked about it on social media. You've talked about other interviews about how great it's been to be with Brave and how they've treated you. You know, for, you know, I mean, you understand there's a lot of fans out there that, hey, it's just about the UFC. That's all they watch. How would you describe how you have felt different being treated by Brave in comparison to, you know, previous, you know, your previous organization?
You know, honestly, how I'm getting treated now in Brave is what I expected to be treated in the UFC. You know, I expected, I'm not saying I need somebody hand and foot there for me or this or that, but, you know, if you're a fighter, you know, I need to, mainly in the weight cut week, things need to be organized properly. So I'm not obviously in a mental state where I'm accidentally yelling at people, because again, we are cutting weight. We do get very, very moody. I'm not accidentally overtraining. I'm not doing certain things that I probably just shouldn't be doing. And Brave, honestly, they're very, you know, open to some of the situations that I had, and they go, "Hey, you need this? We got you. Oh, you need this to be taken care of? More than happy. Oh, you know, we'll find somebody for you if we don't have this for you." And they're really, really open to a lot of things. They definitely promoted me a lot, which, again, something I thought the UFC was going to do, never did. And again, they're treating me what I expect a premier promotion to treat their fighters. And I think that's the best thing. Again, I've talked to so many veterans. I train at American Top Team, where the Scott Askham, for example, Scott Askham was, I think, an even record in the UFC. I think he was either 4-3 or whatever the case may be, or 3-4, and he gets cut. He says he's making more money in KSW. They're treating him that much more, and he just re-signed another contract because he's that happy with them. You know, it's, everyone asks me, "Hey, do you want to get back in the UFC?" I'm 26. Technically, there's always room for that, but do I want to at all right now? No, it's like a bad breakup to me, you know? So, Brave is ran by fighters, and they respect that. They're treating their very first card like their main event. They're treating everyone and giving everyone an equal opportunity. Compared to the UFC, if they don't like you, it doesn't matter. You know, it's like, how many Ultimate Fighter winners have you seen not be on a main card because they're just not popular? But that's not 100% their fault. You know, Demetrius Johnson was the best flyweight, if not best champion in their history. Why is he not popular? He is. Just the UFC never really gave him a fair chance compared to Colby Covington, Conor McGregor, all these other guys. And look at 1FC. 1FC, Demetrius Johnson goes in his first event, and after the event, he says, "Dude, I've never come out to a crowd like this before. I've never been chanted like this before," and he wasn't even the main event. You know, so it really depends on the promotion. For me, Brave is definitely that promotion for me.
Yeah, one of the things that I've really noticed since working, you know, as they've been sending press releases, as they send press release every day about various fighters, and of course they had one just come out on you here in the last day or so, because it hasn't taken you long to already get your next fight ready to go here. And you mentioned about, you know, hey, you want to be that flyweight champion, that inaugural flyweight champion. You know, you and Marcel, it seems like this is a collision course. I mean, do you think we're kind of close to maybe here in the next couple of weeks that's going to come together?
You know, I have talked about it with the matchmaker, and I always tell the matchmaker, as long as you give me a 2-month advance full training camp, I'm pretty much accepting anyone, mainly if it's for a title fight. If you believe this is what Brave fans want, you believe this is the fight to make for a title, then yeah, sure, I should be the best in the world. The champion should be able to beat everyone. Sure, I'm not going to deny anyone. But Marcel, for example, I look at it from a business and matchmaker point of view. If, you know, I believe the card that I want to be on is in Brazil. You know, I'm not 100% sure, but if it's in Brazil, well, then yeah, Marcel Adair sounds like a phenomenal fighter because he is from Brazil. We'd be higher up in the card because of that, but he's also coming off of a loss, and it was for the inaugural flyweight championship, given the guy missed weight, so the guy couldn't win the belt, but he lost. So it's one of those things that does he deserve a title shot, mainly coming after a loss, mainly coming after a title shot loss? Me, I've never lost in a title fight, so do I give him that fight or do I give him the fight after I win the belt? You know, so it's the fact of what does the matchmaker want to do and what do Brave fans want? But for me, I'm more than happy to fight whoever and put on a show regardless.
Yeah, I was thinking about, you mentioned about being 26 years old, and you know, obviously as you get older, your body changes. I mean, do you think there is a time window for you at 125 to where maybe the time is going to come to where it just makes sense to be at 35?
Yeah, 100%. It's the bad thing is I'm at a crossroads between both weight classes because I'm at the point, and again, as you said, I'm very, very open with being realistic. I'm like, hey, I don't want to go on the ground because this guy's jiu-jitsu is real good. I'm good. For me, I'm in between. You know, if there was a catch weight class like 130, I would love to do that all the time because I can make 25, but then it doesn't make the sport fun for me. You know, I get to 2 weeks, 3 weeks before the fight, and I'm cutting off my carbs. I'm getting moody. I'm getting angry. I'm doing things that I don't usually do. I'm acting very, very different. And then I'm not training. All I'm worried about is cutting weight instead of actually defining my craft and getting ready. Compared to 35, I'm a lot more happy, a lot more fun, and just joyous and all these things. But then these guys are bigger and stronger, and it's harder for me to get the KO and knockout win at bantamweight. I believe all my wins at bantamweight have either been by decision, if not submission. I've dropped them, but I can't finish them. But at flyweight, besides my last one with Amir Albazi, every single flyweight fight, even the one I lost, has ended either in the first or second round. You know, so I have the power to knock guys out. So it's at 50. I do believe there is a time window, but right now my main goal is win a fight, which is done already. Go for the belt, win the belt, defend the belt, and then bump up.
Is there anything you have set for yourself to accomplish before the end of this year? I mean, obviously you want to win a belt, like you just said there, but is there anything else that you set an internal goal of what you want to be able to accomplish this year?
Yeah, so when I signed with Brave, I signed a 4-fight contract, and immediately I go, well, let's try to repeat what we did in Titan FC. First fight, win. Second fight, go for the belt. Third fight, defend it, because I believe every champion should defend the belt. You are a real, real dominant champion if you defend it. And then bump up and go for the bantamweight championship. And I believe Brave is still, for me, you know, they're in that intermediate phase where they're not in their beginning, they're not as small as they used to be, but they're not obviously in the Bellator UFC level yet. Again, they're the fastest growing promotion in the world, and only, I believe, 2.5-3 years they've been to 18 different countries, which is ridiculous. I actually believe that's more than the UFC. But it's one of those things that they don't have a huge, huge, huge talent pool yet. It's definitely getting there. So there's opportunity for me to win the belt, defend it, and then immediately bump up and get that opportunity and hopefully be the very first ever, you know, Brave double weight class champ. I didn't Titan FC, and that promotion's been around for 50-something events. You know, so for me, Brave is only about to be on their 24th. There's definitely room for me to grow in that. That's something I want to do. But, you know, we'll see. I think another mental goal is, and Lou yelled at me, my nutrition, is if I want to make 125 fun again, I have to live a healthier lifestyle. I am a week after my fight, so usually the week after the fight, I get nice and happy. Look at these chunky cheeks. So I get to enjoy myself, no limits, which is bad because I really have no limits. I'm like a black hole when it comes to food. But, you know, starting Monday, I get back to it. And I'm healthy. I'm young. I know I can get back to it as fast as possible. Let's you know, put on a great show, whatever the next event is. But my goal is to commentate possibly for the next event and then go on to, you know, fight hopefully for a title.
And, of course, we're just going to have to wait and see when that happens. Shorty, as always, I appreciate time. Of course, let me know if they can follow you on social media. Of course, those sponsors that have been supporting you.
Oh, man, I would love to shout out all my sponsors. But if people remember, I had, I think, 32 sponsors on my banner. So that's a lot of sponsors. But, I appreciate everyone's support. If it weren't for everyone's help, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. But, you know, if people want to follow me, Jose Shorty Torres on Instagram, Jose Shorty Torres MMA on Facebook, Shorty Torres 125 on Twitter. And if people want to support, I actually just started my Team Shorty Foundation, where I help keep kids and young adults in the gym and off the streets. TeamShorty.com, all the apparel, 100% of the proceeds go to that foundation, and everything ships worldwide. It really is a big thing. I actually have my victory party tomorrow where I'm auctioning off, just like Dustin Poirier, a lot of my gear, raffling off some things from the fight, and selling a lot of gear. And literally 100% of those proceeds go to kids in my gym and sponsoring athletes and doing so many things. So I'm trying my best to give back as much as possible. So I appreciate if people give back to me as well. TeamShorty.com, and I appreciate all the love and support. We can, we will. Together we are Team Shorty.
Back on the program with Vansco, you're turning to the Shamrock FC cage on Friday night, May the 10th, Shamrock FC 318, Dustin Lampros. Of course, I had him on prior to his last fight. And, of course, when we talked, he had Adam Stone was the opponent. That was after an opponent change prior to that. And then when I was getting ready for his interview, I realized he didn't fight Adam Stone. He had another opponent who ends up, man. What was that fight week like for you?
Honestly, like a bunch of my amateur fights, because that's how it always happens. Like, it seems like my pro debut, you know, it got switched up. My pro debut got switched up 2 days before the fight, and then we didn't know who we were fighting until the day of. So, I mean, it's pretty hectic, but I surround myself with really good people. So they, you know, make me feel comfortable, and we take the situation head on, and it doesn't change anything.
But, of course, you got the win, stay undefeated. Now you got this one against Colton. You know, what's kind of – how is it heading this one compared to other ones?
It's the same mindset, you know. I come into these fights trying to finish the guy, you know, fast. I like going in there and fighting. You know, that's what I like to do. I don't want to sit around and, you know, play touch games and move back and forth. I like going in there and getting after it and finishing the fight fast and getting out. And that's what I like to do. And I don't think my preparation or anything, like, I mean, I've made improvements, and, you know, I've changed little things in, as in, like, my training, like my stance and my movement, my range. But other than that, it's nothing's changing.
Is that something your coaches had seen, whether it's in sparring or on fight night, that has said, hey, we just think we need to make these little minor adjustments to kind of go to the next level?
No, it's more or less me. I feel it. You know, I know it. I deep down, I know it when I'm going with these guys that are in Bellator and UFC and the high-level organizations. You know, I feel there's little things that I'm missing, but it's totally learnable, and I'm totally there to, you know, catch on really fast, and obviously I am, you know. No, it's more or less me. I really feel it, and I know it.
You mentioned about it. Of course, anybody can look at your record. We'll see. You don't waste any time. We always hear about this feeling out period in a fight. For you, is that feeling out period like 15, 30 seconds?
Yeah, I mean, I think I feel the guy out. When I can look at him and see, like, if he's about it and see what's going on. You know, if I know he's going to be tough, then, yeah, maybe I'll take my time. And, you know, if I feel like he's going to come out, you know, really wild and really crazy, then yeah, I take my time. Like the Jeremy guy, you know, I got to look at a little footage before the fight, and I seen he's really like sporadic, real wild, really wiry, you know. So I was like, all right, I'm gonna come out and just, you know, let him burn himself out in the first minute, exactly kind of how he did, and then, you know, just put it on him, you know. So it just kind of depends. Yeah, I guess you're right. I would feel it out for a little bit, maybe that first maybe 5-10 seconds. I feel his energy, and if he's not trying to, you know, engage, then I'm usually going to be coming right at him.
is it easier to fight someone with that type of style as opposed to someone who's sitting back and very patient and what they're trying to do?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't. I think I would say that I have more openings fighting somebody who's coming at me and really wanting to engage, which I don't have too often. And, you know, I don't have too many guys that want to strike with me, but, you know, I don't know. I would say that, fighting somebody that does want to engage is a little bit easier than someone that's just sitting back and not really trying to engage. Then it's harder to fight them, you know, then you're chasing them. And then you're just like, you're trying to pick your shots too much because the guy ain't doing too much. You know what I mean?
Because of the run you have been on, do you feel there's a target on your back right now of guys who are like trying to say, I want to be that first guy that hands Dustin his first L?
I mean, I've never seen anything or heard anyone talk about me, but I'm sure there's, some people out there that are like, oh, you know, he ain't anything or, you know, whatever. I'm sure there's people always, there's always going to be haters. But personally, I don't really care. I'm doing me and I'm going to do what I have to do to make my career successful, and I can care less about everyone else.
I mean, is it one of those things where you just kind of try to stay away from like the social media aspect of like, you know, I'm not going to sit here and read the comments and what people are saying.
I mean, especially at the Shamrock FC level. I mean, I don't care about being the best St. Louis fighter ever or the best, you know what I mean? Like that to me, I have a goal. I'm going to be in the UFC. I want to be a UFC world champion. So I'm not going to be on there talking crap to other Shamrock fighters when it means nothing because no one cares about, you know what I mean? I'll save that for when I'm in the UFC and on the big stage.
I mean, how, you know, if you think like the U.S., you know, getting to the UFC is a number 10 on a scale of 1 to 10, where do you think you are on that scale?
Honestly, I don't know. I mean, I have 3 first round finishes. You know, I have people that are helping me out. I'm not signed anybody with a manager yet, but I'm going to be soon. You know, and I feel like we're taking the right steps, taking the right fights. And I, on a scale of 1 to 10, honestly, I would say I'm probably I'm on that 7, hitting that 8 range. You know, I'm getting closer and closer. I mean, I think it's going to be hard to deny someone if I can make a run at 5-0, 6-0 with all finishes.
When you made your pro debut at the beginning of last year, is this where you thought you would be right now?
I thought I would be right now. Realistically, sounds kind of silly. I thought I would be like 5-0 right now, maybe. I got hurt in that fight in May, last May. I broke my hand and was out for a good 6-7 months. So I honestly thought I'd be a little further, but that would be best case scenario, obviously, if I was a little. But no, I mean, I'm fine. Everything happens for a reason, and I'm getting ready to push hard for this 4-0.
Is there anything you want to prove to yourself in this fight? I mean, like, is there maybe it's something you've been working on in the gym or just kind of personal goals you have set for yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. There's things in the fight that I plan on doing that I don't typically do, that I want to be more, I don't even say more. I want to be better at, you know, like, and I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to do it in this fight. This is a good fight for me to go out there and really, you know, let some of my tools go. So, yeah.
As you prepare for the fight and you looked at your opponent, was there something where you just sat there and said, man, this is why I really love this matchup, you know, because you see the holes are going to be there for you?
Yeah, honestly, I'd be lying to you if I said I've never seen any video on him. I couldn't find any video, just from word of mouth, from what I heard, you know. I heard he's tough, you know. I heard he'll come to fight. And so for me, I mean, that's perfect because – at 135 pounds, you got to be pretty damn tough and ready to fight if you're fighting me. You know what I mean? So he's got to be bringing something or else it's going to be fast work.
And of course, you mentioned here a win gets you to 4-0. And you mentioned about how, you know, look, you're trying to get in and out as quickly as possible. Yeah. Is there ever a part of you that wants to go 15 minutes?
Well, I'm sure. I want to go 15 minutes when I'm getting paid real money to do it, and you know, they'd get banged up like that and take that type of damage, you know. Like, obviously everybody wants to see you fight another stud and another guy on the come up in the regional shows, but for me, I think that's very stupid. Like, I think that's so much, you're taking a lot of risk. That's why I train with the best guys in the world, so I can train at that level and get used to that, so then
you know, I take the right fights, I build myself, and then, you know, I start taking the harder matchups and getting going. You know, I don't fall into the whole trying to fight the toughest guy right now. What am I trying to prove to who, and for what money? For a couple thousand bucks? I'm cool with going in there and you know, having a good matchup and getting the win.
I'm glad you said that, because I have talked about that on my show so many times. I'm sitting here going,
a lot of guys that they're like, oh, you're fighting bums, you're fighting this. Well, first off, I mean, I can't help when guys pull out. Like, that's not my problem that opponents get hurt and pull out week of the fight and I have to find someone. But, yeah, I mean, most guys aren't going to say it. I'll say it. I mean, you know, this is a business. You know, this is a business. My body, it's like a race car. You know, you got to repair the car. Like, this, my body, you know, I only have one of these, everything, my cheekbones, everything. I'm not, who am I? Why do I want to go out there and say, oh, let me fight the best fighter in Shamrock FC so I can go on and put this crazy show on? For who? For what? Where's it? What's it going to? UFC don't care. They're not going to get, they don't care about that. They want to see guys going out there showcasing their skills. Like, you know, that's one thing I got asked about me fighting wrestlers right now. Like, why, oh, you haven't fought any wrestlers? It's like, yeah, I personally don't want to when I'm fighting in a smaller cage. I mean, like, let's use our head. Like, take two steps back. You're against the cage. It makes a boring fight. You know what I mean? Like, and bringing out all my whole hometown and friends and family to go out there versus someone who's just going to hold me and hug on me and not want to fight me. You know what I mean? Like, I'd rather have someone who's game to fight come out there. Let's put on a show. And, well, I mean, if he ain't as ready as I am, then he's going to get finish. Simple as that.
I just remember, this was, man, years and years ago, I had someone in the industry sit there go, why would you want to take a fight that's a UFC level fight and make regional level pay? I mean, but you know what? I gotta admit, I think this is the first time I've ever heard a fighter be open and honest about this, because it's the truth. I've been saying
years. What do I gotta prove? I gotta prove that I'm tough. Who do I gotta prove that I'm tough to? I'm a pro fighter. Obviously, I'm gonna be in the UFC. I'm gonna be fighting the best in the world eventually. But you don't, there's guys, if you're a kid, you know, you wrestled from kindergarten, you're a Division I wrestler, and then, yeah, that's different. You know what I mean? You have something that you've been doing. I've been doing the sport for 3 years, like, seriously, like, dedicate my life to it. You know, I was an amateur fighter training twice a week, being a kid, you know, like, not doing, you know what I mean? Like I have nothing to hide. I've been around the best guys. I'm learning from literally the top guys in the world down here in Florida, telling me exactly what to do and telling me I'm doing everything right. You know, I don't care what the guys in the regional show say or the local shows, because what they say doesn't matter. And they're doing what they think is right and calling out everyone, fighting the toughest guys. And that's cool. If that's what you want to do, go do that. You know, I'm not trying to go out there. My fighting style specifically, I mean, let's be honest. It's not a soft fight. Like, I come out and swing. I fight. I throw everything into it, you know. I'm not going to go out there and try fighting another UFC level fighter that for regional pay. Exactly what you're saying. You know what I mean? It makes zero sense. I'm not, like, is someone going to knock me for it? I mean, I'm a fighter, and I want to be in the UFC, so what do you think? Like, eventually I'm going to be fighting these guys, you know? That's why I train with these guys now. I don't know. I just believe that I have the blueprints to get to the UFC and do this the right way, and I can really care less about what anybody thinks, and that's it.
And because of training where you train, I also, from my view, I look at it and say, and you can obviously tell me if I'm right or wrong, the hard part for you is, you know, non-fight night. Fight night's an easy night because you're like, look, I'm training with guys who are at the top of the game, and you know, yeah. Fight night's just an easy part for me.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm more nervous in sparring session than at Hard Knocks 365 than I am in my fight. And it's not because the guys are, I'm saying, like, they're going in there knocking you out or none. It's just because it's high level striking, it's high level pace, it's the highest level, and you got to be ready for that, you know. And for me, that alone makes me ready for the fight. What can this guy bring, you know? And then people say to them, why don't you fight, you know, the best guy? It goes back to my saying, I ain't going to go out there and try breaking my hand, breaking my leg, doing all this stuff for $2,000 to fight another guy who's UFC level that I can meet later in the future and then fight him, you know, when we're both getting paid real money in on a stage to really showcase our skills. I just, most fighters, like, I don't know, you're saying most of them don't open up and say it. I'll say it. I think it's ignorant. I think it's bad business. I think your body is your weapons, your business. You got to take care of it. My face, my brain. I'm not going out there to fight another stud to get my face ripped open in front of my family when I'm building myself. Like, that right now doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? Like, that, I mean, someone can call me any name in the book and say I'm scared. Go ahead. You know, when I'm progressing and I'm building myself and I'm 6-0, 7 and I'm in the UFC, what are they going to say? Well, looks like your way didn't work out.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I've had the conversation with managers and coaches about this. They said, look, you know, you have to be, this is a business, and you got to be smart of how you develop your fighter. And there's some managers that I think do an incredible job. I think there's other managers that rush their fighters too quickly.
Hey, and sorry if I cut out there. That's why I don't have a manager right now. I'm doing it all on my own right now because I know it's smarter that way. I don't want to get played by anybody. And the people I'm talking to right now that I'm possibly gonna be signing with, I think are great people. So I don't know. Right now I'm so young in my career and I'm getting, you know, fights back home. I have a contract signed. I just don't need to push for a manager right now and have them pick my fights.
But of course, you got this fight coming up here. Another chance to get another victory. Dustin, man, as always, appreciate time and love the conversation about that because it's definitely something. I feel like my listeners now will know what I've been preaching for like the last 5 years about this when it comes to regional MMA. But I appreciate time.
Listen, you want to be the regional tough guy and be the, you know, Mr. Badass in the regional circuit, fights everyone, fights all the tough fights. You go for it. That's what you want. That's what you want to do. I'm learning from the top guys and taking the right steps, and I'm gonna make my career, you know, the way I'm gonna do it, and everyone else can just watch and say what they want.
Let everyone know they can follow you on social media. Of course, the sponsors that are along for the ride.
You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Scrappy_135MMA. And on Facebook, Dustin Lampros, all my sponsors, I appreciate them. Platinum Vape, Sabaki Fest, Tequila's Mexican Restaurant, Utmost Existence. You guys are amazing. So stay tuned. May 10th, the co-main event at Shamrock FC 318. I'm coming for the finish.
And there was my conversations with Brent Primus, Shorty Torres, and Dustin Lampros. Of course, Brent, first fight since losing the Bellator lightweight title. A lot of interesting stuff there talking about that fight against Chandler, knowing what he did wrong and not going back and watching. Shorty Torres, really interesting, kind of, you know, what's happened with him over the last year or so with, you know, getting in the UFC at short notice and the massive weight cuts he had to do to make weight. And of course, now, especially interesting to kind of hear him talk about, you know, how he's treated at Brave and why he just, you know, goes into examples of how well they're treating him. And then, of course, the interview with Dustin Lampros at the end of it, something I have been saying for a long time of as a regional fighter, why should you take a UFC level type fight for regional pay? So really appreciate Dustin, you know, mentioning that. And of course, I will have other Shamrock FC interviews up on the MMAReport.com over the next week or so. Also, if you go over to MMAReport.com right now, you can watch my conversations with several fighters. A couple of those are, one of them is Jordan Levette, who's going to be fighting next week at FFC 36 in Las Vegas. And we talked about how he's worked on political campaigns, how he's read over 100 books over the last year. Talks about how he discovered MMA also. Chatted with Mark Cherico, who is, you may remember last year from the Contender Series. He is he's really kind of, it seemed like he was done in MMA. He's had a lot of problems with neck pain. But he's been taking CBD, which has actually been helping with him with his neck pain. And he's actually going to be taking part in a charity exhibition boxing match coming up on Friday night. So talk to him about that. Also, coming up later on this week on the MMA Report, I'll have interviews with Joby Sanchez, going to be main event of Friday's LFA card. Also, I've chatted with Ty Flores, John Neal, Hunter Azuri, Derek Scott.
Scott, Tyler Diamond, Zach Cavender. So got a ton of interviews that are up there that are coming up here on themmareport.com. But Daniel, let's get into this weekend's MMA. And, of course, we get the Bellator card in the afternoon here in the United States. Of course, taking place over in Birmingham. The car will be available on the Bellator app. This is part of the Bellator European Series. And, of course, at nighttime, we've got UFC Ottawa. To me, when it comes to Bellator Birmingham, how does Brent Primus bounce back? We just heard Brent talking about the fight. And to me, the other one is the Bellator MMA debut of Raymond Daniels.
Those are the two storylines I'm looking forward to. Raymond, I think he hasn't fought an MMA since 2008, and obviously hell of a kickboxer. Look, this dude's 38 years old, so it's not like he's going to be the king of the planet, but he's someone who I think could be really, really entertaining to watch, and I'm sure he's set up to get a victory. Yeah, Brent Primus, man, he's fought once per year. Well, obviously, a pair of fights with Michael Chandler, I'm sure it'll be refreshing to be in the cage opposite someone who isn't Mr. Chandler. And when I look at this card, I think it's going to be a fun main card watch because I think it's going to be a lot of finishes. I think it'll be real entertaining. And, if you're a fan of English mixed martial arts, you look at that prelims, there's a lot that is somewhat interesting. Judo Jim Wallhead, Saul Rogers, who's from the Ultimate Fighter season they did not too long ago. Interesting little fight card, Jason. But absolutely, if you're contrasting events, UFC gets the nod this weekend. The Bellator card just isn't bringing me a whole lot to the table. And for the UFC, I mean, I'm looking forward to it, man. We're talking about an 11-fight card. Are you kidding me? Hell yes.
One note I'll mention about the Bellator card, I think one guy to pay attention to is Fabian Edwards, who's 6-0 in his career. His opponent, Falco Neto Lopez, who's 11-9, very much an up-and-down fighter, since 2014, alternating wins and losses. You kind of feel like this is a little bit of a showcase fight here for Fabian Edwards, but he is definitely someone to pay attention to on that Bellator card. But, yeah, you do mention, this is a fight card that is for the UK audience. This is not necessarily a fight card that is for the American audience. Also, should be noted, Derek Campos in the co-main event of this fight card. But, when I was looking at this UFC fight card top to bottom, I was like, this is a nice little fight night card, Daniel.
Well, it starts at the top. It starts at the top, man. Like, I am so hyped for the main event fight between Donald Cerrone and Ali Aquinta. I mean, Donald Cerrone, every time he fights, sign me up. Al, very entertaining fighter. I think it's going to be a great stand-up fight. So I'm looking forward to it, Jason. Undoubtedly, it's the best fight of the weekend, and it's not even close. So,
No question.
There's that. The co-main event's pretty interesting with Brunson and Elias Theodoro. And if Aquinta and Cerrone isn't the best fight of the night, I think Cub Swanson and Shane Burgos will. And then the other thing that really has my interest, Jason, is Macy Chiasson. She's taking on Sarah Morris, and she's a huge, huge favorite. I think she has two finish victories in the UFC so far at women's bantamweight. It's another fighter. I think it's definitely the fighter to keep an eye on the prelims.
Yeah, Macy Chiasson, a 7-1 betting favorite on this fight card, by far the biggest betting favorite on this fight card. Other big betting favorites, Nordim Taleb, who's got a short notice opponent here. Of course, Sirbat Hazara was supposed to be in this matchup, pulls out, and now you got a UFC debut, a Kyle Pepelec, plus 300 on the betting lines. But other than that, it's pretty even odds throughout the fight card. When you look at, that undercard, Juan Adams is a guy that I've talked to in the past. Someone that if you follow him on social media, there was a time that he just was just kind of really complaining about not getting fights. And by the way, the prelims will start at 5 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN Plus. Of course, that's 4 p.m. Daniel's time, and of course, 2 p.m. there. Out on the West Coast, main card will start at 8 p.m. Eastern time. Before we get to the main event, Brunson Theodoro, the thing about that fight is, I mean, obviously, when we think of Derek Brunson, we think of a guy that he can end your night at any moment. But that's a fight where I think can Elias Theodoro just frustrate Derek Brunson so much that Brunson's going to just leave an opening for Elias Theodoro? You mentioned about Swanson Burgos, man. Love that fight. Brad Katona against Davishvili is a fight that interests me. And also you got, you know, Walt Harris, who was on the show last week. He's on this fight card as well. But to me, it is those top three fights of what's drawing me to ESPN Plus on Saturday night.
Yeah, I totally see that. You mentioned Merab Dalsvili. That's another fighter for sure that I agree on that I'm looking forward to. And yeah, man, I'm looking forward to it. Again, you can't overstate how excited I am to only watch 11 fights.
Yeah.
Like it feels so good. Some of these 14 fight cards just kill me. But I think and the best part is I think this fight card's going to peak at the very end. So, yeah, sign me up. In terms of picks, I'll go with Cerrone. I'll go with Elias Theodoro, and I'll go with Shane Burgos.
That's interesting. Main event, I don't know, man. I lean Aya Quinta in that one, but to me, that's just such a close fight. Co-main event, give me Brunson. I don't feel good about it. Swanson Burgos, give me Burgos.
Yeah.
But those fights. I can see those fights going either way. I mean, they're kind of all a little bit of coin flip fights. I mean, with Theodoro, I just think it's does he frustrate Brunson? That to me is a question mark. But definitely looking forward to these fights this weekend. Before we get out of here, I do want to talk about some other MMA news items. Late last night, ESPN's Brett Okamoto and Ariel Helwani had a story about Dana White saying Brock Lesnar's retiring and Daniel Cormier's Stipe Miocic rematch is going to take place in August. And so Stipe gets what he's been looking for the last year or so. I did see Curtis Blaydes put out a tweet about, you know, thanking Brock Lesnar for holding up the division. And it's like, I understand why he tweets that, but it's not really the truth. The truth is Daniel Cormier has been injured, so he couldn't defend the title. Since his fight against Derek Lewis back in November. The Brock Lesnar thing, and of course Brock really doesn't talk to the media, so we don't hear his side. I mean, to me, it's several options you look at. Is it option A that maybe there's a USADA issue? Is it option B the UFC wasn't willing to pay him what he wanted? Is it option C that maybe the Cormier fight just didn't interest him? Maybe he was looking for, you know, maybe like a John Jones type fight? Or D, maybe the WWE comes to the table with a huge offer and he's like, you know what? I'll do this WWE thing. I don't know if I want to go through a 6-week training camp.
He just failed a drug test, Jason. That's what it was. That's what I'm conspiracy Daniel. And that's what it went off. I don't know. It could be that. Hey, it could be that, man. I mean, probably not. But the way there's a lot of, secrecy regarding failures. Hey, that could be possible. As he tried to get in the testing pool, his piss popped. So it's not like his history to think that happened. My best guess, though, is financials. Where he is, I think he may have taken a nice little look at Daniel Cormier and a nice little look at Stipe Miocic and John Jones and thought, damn, these guys are a lot better than Randy Couture was. I don't know if I can do this. And so I think it's a combination of that and the financial security of whatever deal the WWE gave him. But we can't rule out the controversy, the conspiracy of maybe he failed the drug test. That's fair that he didn't really hold up the division, but he's absolutely been a talking point for the longest time. Mm-hmm. And we still live in a world where I wouldn't be surprised if he fights again, because that's just how things work in the sport.
Another WTF moment this week was ONE Championship putting out a press release about a manager's criteria to represent a ONE Championship fighter, which one of the criteria says that you have to live in Asia. WTF on that one, Daniel. Like, it is just, you know, first off, and Jason House of Viridium Sports Agency, he had a great comment about this. Because Jason is certified by the NFLPA as an agent, so he can represent NFL athletes. And he said, certification does not come from a promotion. It comes from a players association. I saw that email, and I was just like, just another example of potential conflicts of interest with one championship. And I don't, I just, oh man, there are certain things with one championship that I just shake my head at.
Excuse me. It's as simple as this. That first rule, you got to be like live in Asia for a year. You're just killing your company if you hold that true, because the best fighters in the world are represented by agents who don't live in Asia. I hate to break it to you. Malki Kawa doesn't live in Asia. Not to say he's the best agent in the world, but he has clients in the organization. And yeah, you're literally handicapping your promotion. I think it's clear what's going to happen is there's going to be exceptions made for the top tier free agents. But I don't even know why it's a rule there. It's a WTF moment.
Here's my thought. I think they're trying to control who their lower end fighters work with.
Yeah, I think so too. This is all about control, and I think it's hidden in the guise of we're doing this for the fighters.
Yeah, I just, BS, complete BS. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. Like we have one organization who is not, and then obviously, right, we have another one who's very fighter friendly.
Yeah, I call absolute BS on that one. And the final thing is I saw a tweet. I want to say maybe I saw it Saturday morning where, you know, people are wondering about Jason Soros, who got another win at Titan, of why he, you know, wasn't in the UFC. And someone had tweeted that, well, Titan FC is blocking fighters from signing with Bellator. That is not true. I've talked to people about this. This is not true. You know, if you're in Titan, you can sign with Bellator. So if you saw that tweet is not true at all. Titan's doing a really good job putting on some great events down in South Florida. What I was told, had a really great card on Friday night. You know, the only complaint I kind of got about it was that it was a long night of fights, but Titan's doing some very good things. So, but Titan fighters can sign with Bellator. So I don't know why someone put that tweet out there, but yeah, it's a little bit of a slow weekend in MMA, kind of, Daniel, but I think we got everything in this week.
I think we did. Yeah, and again, Titan FC, that's a fighter-friendly promotion. And a lot happened this past week. The rules and regulations was an interesting conversation, and I look forward to talking about all kinds of violence that takes place this upcoming week, Jason.
And, of course, next week we will be chatting about Bellator 221 next week in Chicago. Initially, I was going to go up to Chicago for that event, but some things have come up, so I'm not going to be able to go to that event, but we're going to get you ready for that one. I'm really looking forward to Chandler and Pitbull. You know, can Patricio Pitbull pull that one off? Of course, also next Saturday is UFC 237. Dale, did you realize next week we have a UFC pay-per-view?
No, I don't. I did not at all.
Yeah, that's the card down in Brazil, headlined by Rose Namajunas and Jessica Andrade. Your co-main event, Jared Cannonier and Anderson Silva. Also, we got Jose Aldo versus Alexander Volkanovski on that card. A card that probably will not do well in terms of pay-per-view buys.
Yeah, and fortunately, they had the hand to bar with the ESPN deal, because if they didn't, they would be looking at a bad buy rate that would affect their bottom line.
Yeah, no, totally. It's and also, BJ Penn fights next week.
That's sad as hell.
Yeah, it's just one of those things of why does the UFC the only reason to say why the UFC continues to book him is they don't want him in Bellator. Could you imagine what Bellator could do with BJ Penn in Hawaii?
Oh my God. A 2-fight card with him and Alima Leigh McFarland.
You do a 2-fight main card, then you do a prelim card of nothing but Hawaiian fighters.
That would be just an amazing event for sure. And obviously they would put BJ against someone he would beat, so that would be even better.
Oh, totally. But, yeah, that is BJ Clay Guida next week. So we'll talk about that next week, Bellator 221. Of course, we'll talk about everything else going on in the world of MMA. Be sure to check out our sponsor, Roman. Of course, they have a special offer for the MMA Report podcast listener. Just go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport for a free online visit. All you got to do is complete an online visit. You can chat with a doctor, and if the doctor decides it would be safe and appropriate, they'll ship you genuine erectile dysfunction medication right to your door in discreet unmarked packaging. And, of course, I do appreciate our listeners supporting our advertisers who are here on the MMA Report podcast. Also do want to thank my guests for coming on this week's podcast, Brent Primus, Shorty Torres, and Dustin Lampros. Also be sure to like the MMA Report on YouTube, as all of our video content, original video content, is up there. Subscribe, rate, review this podcast as well on all the podcasting platforms. I always appreciate those 5-star reviews. So let's go wrap it up with this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
In this week's episode of Crush Performance, if you want to perform at your best, reduce your risk of injuries, and just feel better, get your sleep. This week, we talk with Dr. Charles Samuels, Medical Director of the Center for Sleep and Human Performance, to discuss a new and innovative sleep screening system for athletes. We'll also look at travel, shift work, and technology's role in monitoring and managing sleep. And the top esports teams are looking to sports science to help boost their players' performance. There's Crush takeaways for all gamers, parents, coaches, and employers. Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kerschell, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.